Zimmerman's got it. That's a double play. It's going to be a triple play.
Unbelievable. This could be a double play, if not a triple play. It is.
3 outs. 1 swing of the bat.
And around the horn they go.
Jones, Tavares, to Galarraga.
How about that for getting out of a jam?
Third, second, yes. First triple play.
How about that?
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the Triple Play Podcast. It's been a minute because, well, life. But we are back after a little bit of an unexpected hiatus. I am your host, Wyatt Street, joined as always by my gracious co-host. Guys, introduce yourselves.
Josh, I'm burned from the stove, Strickland.
Bradley, I'm not topping that, Kendall.
But you could also throw in a little stove top reference there. I'm not topping that stove reference.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, there it is. There it is.
No, seriously, you guys got any aloe or something?
Who uses aloe after burning themselves on the stove?
I don't know. I was equating it to sunburn for some reason. Just keep going.
I feel like you need to go to the emergency room, but all right, fam.
I mean, take a quick poll. Who as a kid touched the stove when their parents told them not to? I was definitely guilty.
Of course, yeah. I burned myself on the stove like the other week.
Okay, wow. That might just be a personal problem, but I was...
I mean, it wasn't on purpose.
I was burned.
Josh, maybe you should take a step back from the stove, okay?
I'm trying.
Josh, chicken nuggets in the microwave, all right? That's all I'm going to say.
I got an air fryer for that.
Yeah, our air fryer works very well, trust me.
That's the most adult thing you can do. Toast your chicken nuggies in an air fryer.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I exclusively put my nuggets in the air fryer.
They just come out so crispy. It's so great. It's awesome. Anyway.
Oh, man. That's acceptable.
Dino nugs out of the air fryer? You can't be beat. Can't be beat.
I'm on my way right now.
Yes. It's been a few weeks, but we clearly have not missed a beat. And you know who else hasn't missed a beat? Trade deadline. Every year, it always delivers. And that's right, folks. It is our freaking trade deadline special. All episode long, we're just getting into the nitty-gritty of these trades. So let's just jump right into it, guys. We got a lot to talk about. We're just going to jump right into it, you know? Cannonball into the deep end of this pool. And let's start with a team that had one of the best off seasons. They make a splash here on the deadline. They go out and get the only all-star from the Pirates. Sorry, Bradley.
Whoa, that is not entirely accurate, Mr. Wyatt Street. I want you to take that back.
Okay, I'll rescind it.
Brian Reynolds actually was playing in the all-star game, and he was an all-star. He started.
Okay. Okay. All right.
I don't want to hear it.
I will admit my fault.
But we're now down to one.
I will admit that I was wrong. Excuse me for assuming the Pirates only had one. Granted, it's an easy assumption.
They only should have had one, so you're not entirely wrong.
Okay, there it is. There it is.
Just straight Pirate slander though, today.
I don't get to defend myself that often with this team, but this is my only chance to do it, so I couldn't pass it up.
Dude, I don't blame you. If I were in your situation, I'd do the same thing. But Adam Frazier, he's exiting Pittsburgh. He's making his way to San Diego to join the Padres. He's trading the yellow and black for some yellow and brown. And Bradley, since you've got a lot to say on Adam Frazier, I'll have you start this one. What do you make of this move for San Diego?
He's not exiting Pittsburgh. He is galloping out of Pittsburgh.
He's an excited man to be leaving the eastern side of the United States, specifically in Pennsylvania. I mean, I kind of saw this coming. Frazier was getting a lot of talk about being moved, and I think he had maybe a year left on his contract. So for Pittsburgh, it was definitely the best time to do it. This is Frazier's clearly best season he's had as a Pirate. Made the All-Star team, as we just referenced. Number one hitter right now, you could argue, in baseball. Most number of hits across the league. Padres, this is huge for them. This now makes four all-stars in their infield, which is just insane to think about, joining Cronenworth, Machado, and obviously Tatis. But I like the move. The Pirates got the number 5 prospect back and a couple other prospects that supposedly are not very well-known guys, but I did hear that one of the guys they got has a K per nine of like 18, which is just like fantasy numbers. So
that's absurd.
We'll see how it works out. You know, the Pirates needed to make moves. They needed to dump everybody. I'm glad they hung on to Reynolds. As we mentioned, he is an all-star. Yes, he is. and they also have Cabrian Hayes. So they're going to have a lot of young talent. You know, we'll see what they do with it. They did some decent stuff in the draft. So I like the move for both teams. I think this is huge for the Padres, though. This really solidifies a really good bat in their lineup.
So the Padres are adding a huge bat. I mean, Frazier has been – he's leading the league in hits. He's just a pretty good addition to this already stacked lineup, which, by the way, I have a quick thing to tell you guys. So I was reading the San Diego Union Tribune to, like, kind of read up on something. And
oh, you don't just casually read the Tribune on the daily?
No, I don't casually read the Tribune. But this is the first paragraph. This is about the Padres, this year's San Diego Padres. There might not be much more to say about this floundering team beyond what has been written in my game story from last night's 5-3 loss to the Rockies. Now, to be fair, losing the Rockies, not great. But floundering team?
Oh, come on.
They're currently in the second wild card spot.
Yeah. Of course, they're expected to win the division. Nobody expected the Giants to be this good, but you have the Dodgers still.
No, they were expected to be a wild card behind the Dodgers.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I guess because of the Giants being so good, they're kind of lost. But
to say they're floundering because of unexpected success outside of their control from a different club is kind of a stretch.
You can argue the Dodgers were floundering just because they won a World Series last year and we expected them to literally not lose a game this year. But the Padres have been irrelevant for, like, our entire life.
Dude, I don't know if I've ever seen a Padres winning season.
They had a winning season last year, didn't they?
Last year, two years ago, right?
Yeah.
All right, never mind.
Anyways, this is a big addition just because they've been kind of looking for a way to get Eric Hosmer off the field because he hasn't been performing as well as he should. So this kind of makes way for him. Frazier can play shortstop or second, or and then they can move Jake Cronenworth to first. But of course, the Padres didn't see this happening. But the biggest part about this is Tatis went down with an injury. He re-hurt his shoulder a couple days ago, and he's only on the 10-day IL. But there are some rumblings going around that he might have to have season-ending surgery. Now, there's rumblings. It's just, I don't know if that's factual or not, but that is a potential thing. So this could have been a fantastic pickup just because of that. Of course, they didn't expect it to happen, but, you know.
Yeah, that's the third time he's injured his shoulder this year. So, I mean, we talked about DeGrom in the past, about just these nagging injuries that keep coming up. This is, it's a problem. I mean, you don't want to see a recurring injury like that, especially from a guy like him. But I guess good thing they caught it now. Hopefully they can just rehab it for the next couple months. But, yeah, this could be huge for them just in the short term, getting someone to replace Tatis for sure.
Yeah, that's gonna be tough, especially if he's gonna have to miss the rest of the year. But you know, I like your sentiments. Adam Frazier, huge pickup for the Padres. I mean, Cronenworth, he's kind of like Cronenworth in a sense that he's a utility guy. You can place him at multiple different positions and he can contribute. Adam Frazier is one of the biggest shining stars for the Pirates this year, so. Definitely a guy to come in and just add to the plethora of all-stars already there for the Swingin' Friars. But, you know, that Tatis injury, that's going to be tough. But if he's going to go down, at least it's good to know you've picked up a guy like Frazier to kind of help counterbalance that, if you will. I mean, obviously, he's not Tatis level, but still pretty freaking good. So definitely a huge pickup for a Padres squad who currently sits third in that NL West division, currently holds the second wild card, and they're trying to keep pace with a surprisingly overperforming Giants squad and a juggernaut in the Dodgers who is really good and, believe it or not, is kind of underperforming because they have been so injury-prone this year. And actually, I think I'll go ahead and take this moment to mention the Dodgers and what they did at the deadline, because somehow this juggernaut of a squad got better. They somehow got better because the Nationals, they unloaded a bunch of guys. And we'll break that down as we go along. But the Dodgers got two of the biggest guys in Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. And yes, you heard that correctly. The Dodgers acquired both Scherzer and Turner from the Nationals. So, Josh, I'll shoot this one to you first. The Padres go out, make a big splash. The Dodgers go ahead and just straight up one-up it, in my opinion. But what do you make of this move from L.A.?
Well, I don't think the Dodgers very much like the Giants being better than them at the moment, as you can tell. But, yeah. I mean, adding – so first off, I saw that – I thought the Padres got Max Scherzer because that was what was going around before the Dodgers officially traded for him. So I thought the Padres just went all out and got Max Scherzer somehow. But then the Dodgers decided to get Max Scherzer and Trey Turner, which is insane. So Trey Turner's probably going to play second base or something because Corey Seager's coming back. Coming back from IL here in a little bit. So Corey Seager's going to play shortstop, and you're going to have Trey Turner at second base, which is very interesting. And then, of course, you have Max Scherzer. I mean, you lose Bauer, you get Scherzer. I'm pretty sure most people would take that. Most teams would take that trade off there. So, I mean, the rich get richer, guys. I don't know what to tell you. The luxury tax does not exist for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah, they now have the highest payroll in the history of baseball, which is just insane. They have like $298 million they have their players this year. I think the previous record was like 206 or something. It's just incredible. It'll be interesting because, as we kind of mentioned, the Giants now leading the division. If the Dodgers are not able to overtake them, we could be talking about one of the biggest wildcard games in the history of ever between the Padres and the Dodgers, because look at it this way. I mean, if the Padres got him, they're facing the exact same situation. Could face the wild card. Who do they end up pitching? You got to think the Dodgers would go with Buehler, but maybe they go with Scherzer. I mean, it's going to be an interesting decision they'll have to make if they get to that point. I think there is one thing that no one's really talking about with this Scherzer deal from the Dodgers' sake, and it's Dustin May. We saw Dustin May go down early on in the year, and you were wondering, wow, how are they going to be able to replace such an arm like that? Just a guy that has started in the past but could come in middle relief to go 4, 5, 6 innings if he needed to. I think picking up Scherzer, when you lost Trevor Bauer, this now becomes that much more important for the Dodgers to bolster their staff, because we saw how much they relied on a lot of those guys last year to get him through the playoffs. And if one of those guys like Julio Urias doesn't perform like he had been all year, you now have a guy that you know has consistently performed like Max Scherzer, who can step in that role and really, really make a difference when it really comes down to the playoff time. So Trey Turner's going to be great. I don't think it's going to change a ton about what they do. He's a great player, but they would have been great without him. But I think Scherzer's going to be a huge pickup, especially come the playoff time. Let's just hope they get past the first round if you're the Dodgers.
Yeah, and also to add to the interesting mix of that potential Dodgers-Padres wild card is the fact that the Giants are so surprisingly good this year that they currently hold the best record in the National League. So the winner of that wild card game, as it stands right now, would subsequently move on to the NLDS to face the San Francisco Giants. So for the Dodgers, you look at their perspective, and if they win that game, if it stays put how it is now, whether they go with Scherzer or Buehler, which I'm glad I'm not the one having to make that decision, but it works out perfectly where game one of that series, you go with the other guy, whichever one you didn't pick for the wild card game. But this is huge. I mean, a middle infield of Trey Turner and Corey Seager, sign me up. A 1-2 punch of Walker Buehler and Max Scherzer, sign me up. And when your rotation is one that features Clayton frickin' Kershaw as the number three, I mean, I don't know. How does it get any better than that? I don't think it can.
I'm curious what you guys think of this. I was talking to my boss about this. He's a Padres fan. And I was like, you know, there, you can make a legitimate argument that if you're the Padres or Dodgers, you would rather face the other team, the Padres or the Dodgers, in the wild card game to avoid having to play a 7-game series with them. I think it's actually legitimately arguable. Obviously, you don't want to be in the wild card game to begin with, but if you can beat them and knock it out, I would much rather face the Giants in a 7-game series.
Honestly, the more I think about that, like, yeah, I kind of, that makes sense, because in a one-off game, really anything can happen, right? You get a little lucky and you could beat a team that might be a little bit better than you. More often than not, and that's the reason you do a 5-7 game series, is the better team should theoretically win, right? So, like, you get a team like the Giants who are, let's face it, probably overperforming this year. If they cool off at the end of the year, right, you get a team like the Dodgers or Padres that's much better, at least on paper, they might stand a better chance against the Giants in a full series where theoretically cream rises to the top, as opposed to a one-off game where anything can happen. And if you're the Dodgers or Padres, two teams that are very familiar with each other, hate each other, don't want the other one to win, yeah, I think I might would agree with rolling those dice.
Yeah, it's tough because you don't want to be in the wild card game to begin with. But then again, if you know you're going to win, it'd be so much better to play the Giants.
And it's also like to that point too. It's like, would you rather face the, if you're the Padres or the Dodgers, vice versa, either way, would you rather face that team once or potentially 5 to 7 times? You know, like, I think I'd rather take my chances with just the one game.
I would too.
I mean, yeah. Both teams are just so deep. You definitely do not want to play a 7-game series. Like, even if you're as deep as the other team, it's just demoralizing to face a team that's that deep, you know?
And it's going to be a grind that honestly could almost hurt you in the long run moving into the next round, because both teams are so deep, they kind of go tit for tat, match up evenly. In order to beat the other one, it's going to take every ounce you have. The other team that you face off against, if you win in the NLCS, they might have had a little bit of easier battle. They might come in a little more well-rested, and that could work against you too.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, this is going to be an incredible finish, but I think if you're the Giants, you're kind of loving this. I mean, this puts so much attention on the Dodgers and Padres. You can just kind of ride off into the sunset, keep doing what you're doing, and no one's going to talk about you.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I think it kind of might give the Giants some confidence, because it shows that the Dodgers and Padres don't see this as a team that's had a fluke start to the year and that they think will flounder. It shows that they respect what the San Francisco Giants have done to this point in the season, that they think they might be able to continue it, and they feel the need to make these moves to overcome it, because they feel they have to do something to better themselves to be the ones to overcome the Giants rather than waiting for the Giants to falter. So, big moves there from the NL West. Let's move to the other league in the other side of the country, because I mentioned two guys that just left the Nationals, another guy leaving the Nationals, Kyle Schwarber, making his way up I-95 on up to Boston. He's joining the Red Sox. He had a great run there this year. The left-handed slugger is now in Boston. Bradley, this is a team that, you know, they just lost the divisional lead to the Tampa Bay Rays. They're only a half game back. They're trying to fend off the Yankees there. Huge pickup for the Sox. What do you make of the move?
It'll be interesting to see if Schwarber can keep it going. I think, you know, he's really found his groove that he semi-had when he was in Chicago. Being the Nationals now, you're literally Juan Soto and nobody else. So I kind of feel bad for Soto to a degree, because he has literally nobody else left. But I think for the Red Sox, this is huge, because we just saw the news about Tyler Glass now probably getting Tommy John for the Rays. So he's probably not going to be back the rest of the year. And Boston's now in prime position to make a run in the division. I think Schwarber probably won't win them in the division, but he definitely is going to help them in the long run with just another power bat. Someone that they had really, been looking for. They've really turned it around this year, obviously, just from where they were last year. But to get a guy like that, that you know for a fact could make the world a difference in the end of the season or in the playoffs, where he's capable of hitting 9 bombs in 10 games, even just the threat of that, that's a huge difference maker. And the Cubs were taking full advantage of that when he was in the playoffs with them, and I think the Red Sox can do the same.
It's a weird pickup for the Red Sox, I'm going to be honest with you. Because it doesn't really make that much sense to the Red Sox. So Schwarber, he can be a DH, but they already have JD Martinez as DH. He plays left field, but they already have Alex Verdugo, which they could easily move those guys around. But I mean, Schwarber's used to playing left field, so I wouldn't put him in right or anything. He could play first base, where the Red Sox need a guy at first base, but Schwarber's only played one game at first base. Now, obviously, they could teach him how to play first base. That's not just a position you kind of throw someone out in. I mean, you can, but it's just kind of a weird pickup. It's kind of obvious that they were trying to get Anthony Rizzo, in my opinion, and they just couldn't get him because the Yankees got him. So they went with Schwarber instead, because Schwarber's still a good bat. He's got a lot of pop, and, you know, he'll be good for the Red Sox. It's still a good pickup. I just don't know where he's going to go for the Red Sox.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I've seen that he's, quote, eager to learn first base, so it looks like they might be viewing him as their first base option. He's been out for almost a month with an injury, so he's expected to rehab soon. So the rehab assignment would be a great time for him to just get some reps at first and see how he feels, because if he is able to do well and feels comfortable there, then why not give him the opportunity to play at first? Worst case scenario, you can... When you have a guy like Schwarber who's been popping off this year, and you have other guys like Martinez who make it hard to figure out where to put guys, that's a good problem to have. I could put it that way. I'd much rather have that problem than, oh, I don't have anyone good to put anywhere, right? So, like, if you're the Red Sox, I think that's a good problem to have. I like this move for them. You know, it was unexpected. I wasn't really expecting them to go out and get Schwarber, but in a tight divisional race like that, I mean, any little thing can help. And I think picking up a good left-handed bat, especially with, you know, that right field they have there that makes it easy for left-handed power hitters to hit homers, I think that's a good pickup. But one of those teams they're trying to fend off, currently 6.5 games back of the leading Tampa Bay Rays, so 6 games back of those Boston Red Sox in second place, the New York Yankees, the dreaded, hated New York Yankees. But they went out and they acquired two huge left-handed bats, Joey Gallo from the Rangers and Anthony Rizzo from the Cubs. So the Italian-Americans are on their way to save the Yankees. Josh, I'll shoot it to you first on this one. You know, the Yankees... They're 6.5 games back, so not the easiest of deficits to climb back from, but definitely possible, especially with 2 months left in the season. Two big bats here could definitely help them. Do you think it might be enough?
It's going to have to be. The Yankees have kind of underperformed, which is a crazy thing to say because they're like 8 games above 500, but they've kind of underperformed this year, mostly just because the Red Sox and the Rays are just so good. But these guys, they're adding two lefties to the lineup, and I'm just going to bring up, they got these guys without giving up any of their top prospects, and they somehow got the Rangers and the Cubs to pay the full salaries, full 2021 salaries. So the Yankees, unlike the Dodgers, actually care about being under the luxury tax. They're under the luxury tax still. So Gallo is going to be great. He's Gold Glove defense. He's athletic. He'll be great for the outfield, and he's a home run hitter. He adds to the lineup of either home run or strikeout, which is going to be very frustrating if the Yankees make the playoffs. And then you got Rizzo. Rizzo is a great first baseman. He'll be a great added bat to it. He adds a little bit of leadership and a little winning pedigree there, just because the Cubs were good for so long with him over there. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with these moves. These were fantastic moves on the Yankees' part. It's just whether or not they actually bring the team together and, you know, push them to at least make the wild card.
Yeah, it's ultra important because the Yankees were trying to move Luke Voit for probably about a week. His name was being tossed around as someone they were kind of looking to maybe get rid of, especially if they were able to get Rizzo, and now they've got their answer with just getting Rizzo. So Voit's now going to be behind him, which, you know, if Rizzo struggles or gets hurt or something, they've at least got a guy that can fill in with that. I think this also makes it ultra important for DJ LeMahieu to continue to hit like a 300 hitter, like we've seen him do in the past. You add a guy like Joey Gallo, who's not going to hit for average at all. I mean, he's going to be a big-time home run hitter. He's not going to do what, you know, LeMahieu can do. He's not going to hit 290. So I think that makes it that much more important for other guys in the lineup to produce and get on base so they can knock guys in. Yeah, we've seen the Yankees year in and year out be able to crush home runs, and that will power them through most playoff series if they're just better than the other team. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a big hit or miss. This could be the best move we see all year, and Gallo could go off and Rizzo could go off and they can make the World Series, or they could both get really cold and it just ends up being a typical Yankees exit in the playoffs where they just can't hit the home run ball. So I think it's great. You mentioned being able to cover the salary is huge for the Yankees. Not like they really need the help, but I'll be curious to see, because I don't think they're going to make the World Series this year. They very well might. I don't know if they will. But I'll be curious to see if they're able to lock these guys up for longer term. That'll be the interesting thing to see down the road if they're able to do it past this year. I don't know the contract situation for both those guys, so I can't speak on it, but I'll be curious to watch it.
To that point, actually, I will say that Rizzo is expected, I think, to be a free agent. Yeah, looks like he's expected to be a free agent after this year, so he may just be a rental as long as I'm reading that properly online. But I know they have Gallo under control for next season. So not only did they get the former clubs to cover salaries, not only did they have to not get, not only did they not have to give up their top guys, but at the very bare minimum, Gallo is not a rental. He is a 1.5 year commitment for them. So that's a guy you can count on for not just the rest of this year, but also next season. So you can actually plan a little further into the future with that. Rizzo, if I read the online correctly, the salary website I looked at, whatever, he might just be a rental, but still, that's a hell of a rental. But I think these are two great pickups. I mean, Yankee Stadium, the short porch, it bodes well. It works out pretty well for, you know, left-handed power guys like these two guys are. Rizzo's already started off really hot for them. He's already, in his first three games, got 2 home runs. So clearly he's adapting to the New York lifestyle pretty well. Gallo, he's a good guy to get on base a lot. I think these are guys that are going to contribute really well for them. Rizzo has had a little bit of a slower season overall, but sometimes a change of scenery is all it takes. Get good guys around you, build your confidence. You never know. He might pop off here in the second half of the season, but I mean, for a team that's trying to come back from a 6.5-game deficit, if there's ever a team that can do it, it's a team that's loaded like the Yankees. If there's ever a team that can do it, it's a team like the Yankees that's already got a good lineup, and then they add 2 All-Stars. So I think this is huge for them, whether or not it's going to pan out, yet to be determined, obviously. But I think they went out and they did a really good job of preparing themselves for a potential second-half comeback here in these last couple of months, trying to, you know, go at their heated rivals with the Red Sox, who made a big splash in Schwarber, and the Rays, who may have lost Glasnow, but they've also still got a good squad there as well. So the Yankees might make this in AL East race very, very interesting here at the end because of these pickups. But we mentioned Rizzo leaving the Cubs. He wasn't the only man to shed those pinstripes, because that nucleus, that core that helped them win that 2016 World Series and break that curse, gone. The Cubs unloaded in a fire sale at this deadline. It wasn't just Rizzo. Javier Baez and Trevor Williams off to the other side of New York to join the Mets. Chris Bryant goes out west to help the Giants, give them a splash to try and keep pace with what the Dodgers and Padres did at the deadline. And Craig Kimbrell doesn't have to leave Chicago, doesn't have to move at all. But he's going from the north side to the south side and joining the White Sox. So just basically everyone getting shipped out of Chicago with the Cubs, a team that's underperformed this year, and they currently sit in fourth place in the Central, 12.5 games back. So they basically just said, our season's done, let's hit the restart button. Obviously, they're getting a lot of guys back from this. But Bradley, I'll shoot it to you first for a two-part question for you guys. A, what do you make of this fire sale from the Cubs? And B, which of these moves do you think is the biggest for their new team?
Gosh, I love the fact the Cubs are going to be irrelevant. I can't stand Chicago, and it makes me so happy to see all these guys leave. But that's for another day. I think it's a good move, honestly. This is going to be, I don't know if this will be a precedent that gets set going forward, but the Cubs were a year removed from the playoffs. They're only a couple years removed from the World Series. We're seeing it with the Nationals right now. The Nationals are in the exact same position, and they won a World Series even more recently than Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And look what happened to them. I mean, they dumped everybody, just as Chicago did. So I think if you're going to do it, if you're going to trade away anybody, this is what you got to do. I mean, if the contract really isn't shaping up for you well, and you really just got to dump everybody, it's a great move. So I don't blame the Cubs at all. I mean, I think everyone kind of saw the writing on the wall. Once they lost 11 straight, it was kind of donezo for all these guys. Now, it is interesting that we do see some of these guys move over to the Mets, where the Giants and the White Sox, three very, very contending teams right now, and then the Yankees as well for Rizzo. This is where the Cubs, I think, probably thought they were going to be in as one of those teams this year. I mean, I think everyone really saw the first half of the year that this team actually was pretty decent, but when they lost 11 straight, I mean, it completely took the air out of the balloon. So, not surprised it happened. Best move by... That's a tough one. Baez, I think, is the happiest guy of where he is. He really wanted to go to the Mets to be with Francisco Lindor, so I think that's good for him to be able to go there. I think the most impactful one's probably going to be Chris Bryant. I think if you look at the Giants, you know, we knew they were kind of just a little flash in the pan. I don't know if any of us really 100% buy in. I mean, they're really killing it right now in terms of their record, but this, I think, solidifies them as someone that can really actually compete, and they get a guy that's one of the best hitters in all of baseball. So I think this was probably the most impactful move you'll see out of all these guys that got moved.
I love me a good fire sale, guys. like you said, this is, I mean, if you're going to do a fire sale, this is the way to do it. They got a lot of good prospects out of it. I don't want to say got rid because these are very important guys. Our third roommate is a Cubs fan, and he's been devastated the past week. You got to get rid of them. I mean, they weren't getting any better with this core, so they just decided to sell them all off, and they got some good prospects from it. So, in my opinion, the best one they got was what they traded to the Mets. They traded Baez and Williams to the Mets for Crow Armstrong, which is a very great name. He could be the long-term answer in center field, and he could be a leadoff guy for the Cubs when he's fully developed. So I really like that trade for them. So, but, you know, Cubs are going to suck for a while, though.
Yeah, and that's the hard part of a – you know, we talk about the trade deadline, and everyone loves the trade deadline. There's a lot of good and bad when it comes to that. The good is you see these, you know, big blockbuster deals that just shake up the whole league, and the fun thing is when – you know, your team gains something good. It's awesome. For Cubs fans, for Chicago, this is kind of the bad side of the trade deadline, is when your team's not good and you fire sale and you just ship everyone off, especially for a team like this, that this was that core. This was that unit that like broke a 108-year curse that ended that drought and brought them that World Series. And seeing the tribute videos from the Cubs for guys like Rizzo and Bryant, it, you know, I'm not even a Cubs fan, and I was emotional watching those videos. It feels weird to see these guys wearing different uniforms, especially Rizzo and Bryant. It's weird. It's an adjustment, but if you're the Cubs from the business aspect of things, yeah, it's hard to hit that reset button. You're basically making a sacrifice of sucking for 2 or 3 years minimum, but after that 3 or 4 year window, when these new guys you just got hit their strides, hopefully, you're set. And that's kind of where they were at this point. Like you guys mentioned, you know, they hit that huge skid. They were in second place in the division for a minute, and, you know, they drop a big series to the Reds. The Reds overtake them for second in the division. Things kind of fall south, and then eventually they drop behind the Cardinals. They find themselves 12 and a half games back, and all of a sudden you just kind of have to say, this season's done, let's hit reset and just move forward. Definitely a hard decision, but probably the right one for Chicago. But I think the biggest and most impactful one, I mean, kind of the dark horse one here, is Craig Kimbrel joining the White Sox. I know he's been shaky since he went to Chicago, but he's had a pretty solid season this year, and to have a 1-2 punch of Kimbrel and Liam Hendricks at the back end of that bullpen for the White Sox is huge for them, especially once they get into the playoffs. Kimbrel, a guy who's got a lot of experience, big veteran arm. I think that's one that could pay dividends more in the playoffs. As for overall and right now, honestly, I'm leaning towards Chris Bryant, because the Giants, that's kind of their big shakeup move, right? Chris Bryant's a guy who can play third and the outfield. He's a veteran guy. He's got a really good skill set. And you see what the Dodgers and Padres are doing to try and keep pace with the Giants squad. If that Giants team can hold their own as they were, adding Chris Bryant just makes them significantly better. So I think that might be the most impactful one.
Yeah, I looked at the some of the guys that they got in return, and immediately, the one that jumped out to me was getting Nick Madrigal from the White Sox.
Yes.
That essentially is a one-for-one trade-off for getting rid of Javier Baez. I think that's even an upgrade. Madrigal's a great player. I mean, he's going to be that could be something that haunts the White Sox for a long time if they don't actually win it all this year.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because, like, I actually saw something the other day, like 1 or 2 days ago, from some account. I can't remember if it was like the MLB account or the Fox MLB account or whatever, but like trades that have an impact or, you know, the whatever, but it's like the Mark Teixeira deal where like he left the Angels and got a, and they got a compensatory pick that they used to pick up Mike Trout. So like trades like that, like trades have such an impact longer into the future than you even really think about. And that Magical move, I'm glad you brought that up because I completely forgot about Magical there. But yeah, like one of the top Sox prospects there for Chicago, and he now moves to the Cubs, and that's a huge pickup for them because if he pans out the way he's expected, then boom, the loss of Javier Baez is not really even felt.
Yeah, and that's not even something that'll take a while either. I mean, he's ready now. So if he produces next year, you're already talking about, you know, someone that's going to be formidable at that position. And if you look at the fire sale, I mean, you knew Kimbrel was going to be gone. I mean, the closer is always the one that goes. So really, I mean, if Nadrigal produces like we think he would, that replaces Baez. Then you get the Kimbrel deal, which we knew was coming. Then it just comes down to, should you move Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo? Bryant, probably yes, just for contract stuff. And the fact that they got some good guys in return for Rizzo, I mean, I think in the end it's going to be a really good deal for the Cubs.
Yeah, it's one of those, only time will tell how good these moves really are, but they've put themselves in a position, if it pans out the way they hope it will, it'll work out pretty well. But we mentioned, you know, Kimbrel going to the White Sox. We mentioned the White Sox here. They are in a interesting situation where they've got that Central Division just about locked up. They're 9 games ahead of Cleveland right now. Barring something crazy, it looks like that's their division to win. So they're just getting prepared for the playoffs and making a run at a potential World Series. And speaking of that, it almost feels like Cleveland thrown in the towel and just conceded the division to the White Sox, because they have also acquired Cesar Hernandez from Cleveland. So the White Sox go out and they just bolster their squad even more. Josh, I will throw it to you first on this one. What do you make of this move as the White Sox not necessarily prepare for a divisional push, but more so just getting ready for whenever the playoffs do start?
Guys, they already had Liam Hendricks and they decided to get Craig Kimbrel. Like, what? Why? Like, what? I mean, what?
What? Josh, you forgot a word. Why
I mean,
not?
Jesus. Like, what? But I mean, bolster your bullpen. Bullpen's one of the most important things you can have, especially in the playoffs. So I mean, the White Sox are, that's what this was, preparing for the playoffs, because they are now fully prepared for the playoffs. I mean, they got Hernandez to bolster that second base position, and like I said, they added Craig Kimbrel when they already had Liam Hendricks. So you have two all-star closers now. So, you know, go ahead. Go off, you know.
Yeah, the best thing you can do is just get depth. I mean, that's literally it. They've seen what injuries can do to their team. Hasn't impacted them so far, you know, as we've seen this year. But Hernandez is a good player. I mean, he's having a down year. He's only hitting .236, but still has 18 bombs. So he's got power potential. And just to be able to add someone that can sit behind the guys they've already got, I think you tack that on with Craig Kimbrel. I mean, This division's already locked up. We know that for a fact. But this just becomes a real scary team that, I mean, guys, if we look at the top of the divisions and the West, the Central, and the East, and the AL, it's going to be a hard playoffs to win.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the White Sox, and they're in a position where, like I said, the division's all but locked up. But you got to be prepared for whatever you're going to face. Getting a guy like Cesar Hernandez, who's been having a really good year for Cleveland, I think that's huge. Like you mentioned, freaking Craig Kimbrel, like, that's just, I mean, you guys know I love me some pitching, I love me some bullpen depth. If you're going to be able to have two all-star caliber closers at the back end of your bullpen, that's a 1-2 punch that I don't want to deal with if I'm anybody in October. So, you know, that is huge in of itself. Cesar Hernandez, I think, is huge for helping bolster that infield, and it almost makes you feel a little bit better if you're a White Sox fan about getting rid of Nick Madrigal. I know he's younger than Cesar Hernandez, and I'm not the most familiar with Cesar Hernandez, I'll admit, but you get a guy like Cesar Hernandez who's really good, plays infield, it makes you feel a little bit better, because at least you're not just getting rid of that guy, you're getting rid of that guy, and also, not in the same deal, getting someone in return who is still pretty good at that position. So, not exactly an offset, but still makes you feel a little bit better about it. And not to mention, guys, lest we forget, they've been bit by the injuries this year that hasn't really hurt them too much. But one of those guys, Eloy Jimenez, guess what? He's coming back soon. He's on his way back. So things are looking up.
In Charlotte right now.
Yep, things are looking up for the Chicago White Sox because things are starting to fall back into place.
They're going to be scary.
Yeah, they're going to be good. Moving on now, the last little bit we've got here in terms of the big specific moves we're going to talk about is instead of Angels in the outfield, we've got some Braves in the outfield as the Atlanta Braves, they've had some outfield issues this year. Marcell Ozuna, that's a rough situation there because he's not coming back anytime soon.
We don't like to talk about it.
Yeah, he's...
Yeah, just keep talking.
Rightfully so, he's gone. And not only that, Ronald Acuna Jr., a just terrible break for them.
Once again, we don't like to talk about it.
Yeah, but the Braves have got the deadline gone out and said, we're going to more than fill these holes in the outfield because they acquired, and let me just run down this list for you guys. They went out and they made four moves, all four outfielders, might I add. They acquired Jock Peterson from the Chicago Cubs, another guy dealt in their fire sale, just the first one. They also got Eddie Rosario from Cleveland. Adam Duvall returns to the Atlanta Braves from the Miami Marlins, and they go out and also get Jorge Soler from the Kansas City Royals. Josh, I'm going to go to you again.
Hi,
first on this one as our resident Braves fan. These good moves, what do you think of them? What do you make?
Well, okay. I don't know if you guys know this, but this season's been terrible. This is one of the most frustrating baseball seasons I've ever watched in my life. So, first off, of course, you had the Ozuna thing. But, this team was already very much underperforming before that happened. But then that happened. Then Acuna got hurt, of course, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. Here's the thing. We basically already had platoon guys, but they were, like, AAA guys. Now we're replacing them with, like, low-tier major league guys. So it's a slight upgrade. It's better than nothing, I suppose. Soler is fine. He's fine. He's batting like 198 right now. He's fine. Jock Peterson, he's fine. He's batting like 190. It's fine. Rosario, he's batting like 250 right now, but he's also on he's on the injured list right now, so eh. And then Duvall, we should have re-signed Duvall in the first place. If we had a freaking DH, we would have re-signed Duvall anyways in the offseason. But now we had to trade someone to the Marlins for him. So, you know, whatever. I guess the Marlins can't beat us anymore because every time we played the Marlins, Duvall wrecked us. So, it's an upgrade. Is it a good enough upgrade to win the division? I mean, maybe. I mean, the Mets are blowing this right now. I mean, Jesus, this division's awful, and they are blowing it so hard right now. I mean, we're only four games back. We're still somehow only four games back in this division, and I don't understand how.
Dude, you stand no chance at the wild.
No,
card.
No, I don't actually within anything. Grabs. I don't now. Expect anything. If we make the playoffs, we're getting blown out. Like, it doesn't matter. I don't know. I don't care. It's just making the playoffs.
I mean, the NL East is hilarious.
It really is.
No, like the wild, yeah. The Braves' only hope is the division because the wild card race is literally a three team race between the second and third place teams in the West and the Cincinnati Reds.
And I also my triple play when we get to it also explains why I hate the Braves so much right now. But yeah, that's how I feel.
It is unreal. If you look at the NL East and you look at the expanded standings on the MLB website. It's kind of funny. I mean, we've talked timelessly about the Miami Marlins, how they still have a positive run differential. They're 15 under 500, is just incredible. But then you look at the expected win-loss, which is probably my new favorite stat out of anything you could look at on the standings. But if you look at the current expected win-loss for the entire division, the Braves are expected to be in first place by like five games.
Uh-huh.
The Mets are supposed to be in like fourth, and the Miami Marlins are supposed to be in second. That is not how the division is shaped up right now.
No, not at all. Oh, also, sorry, Wyatt, you forgot. We also got a reliever. We got
Richard Rodriguez.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, we got Rodriguez from the Pirates. Yep. So, you know,
Oh, I'm sorry, Josh. I'm sorry for overlooking the Braves acquiring a reliever.
He should help this dumpster fire of a bullpen, but we'll see.
Hey, man, you get a pretty solid reliever that almost was an all-star, so we almost had three all-stars this year.
Hey, well, there you go. All right. And you traded two of them.
he was not almost an all-star, but I would have been severely depressed if the Fire had somehow managed to tank and actually give away players and not get rid of their closer. They're like 30 under 500. You don't need to close any games. So there's my two cents.
Oh, you want to know another reason why I'm angry at the Braves right now? The Braves are not only the only team in the NL East with a positive run differential. Their run differential is plus 49.
Oh, dude, look at the Phillies. You have 73 more runs than the Phillies, and you're half a game back.
Why? How? How? This is the most frustrating 70... baseball season ever.
I mean... Dude, you must be winning games like 17-0 and losing games like 2-1. That's the
You're
only
not
explanation.
Wrong. You're not wrong.
Even the Nationals have a better run differential than the Phillies.
I mean, it is remarkable.
And the Mets are negative.
It's honestly impressive.
I don't really know what I can contribute to this conversation after everything Josh has said. I mean,
yeah. I mean, the Braves' remaining schedule. Let's take a look at this, because this will be what really defines the rest of the year. I got to see what kind of games they got coming up, because I'm actually super curious.
I think we're playing the Nationals a bunch, which is going to help us because the Nationals have pretty much given up on the season. So,
yeah. Actually, to that point, while Bradley looks this up, like, it's interesting. The Nationals and Cubs both fire sale almost everybody. And after the deadline, they played each other. And those lineups are hilarious to look at. Because it's literally just the, who are you people meme.
Yeah, the Braves literally don't play the Mets again until the last series of the year. So
yeah, they've got the Nationals twice. They play the Reds. They play the Orioles and the Marlins. You can win a lot of games here. But then you got to play the Yankees, Giants, and Dodgers.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough stretch. But then we get rewarded with the Rockies.
There you go.
Josh, if you don't win 80% of the games in September,
the Braves don't deserve to be a freaking team in the entire MLB.
Dude, I mean,
because you have a four-game series against the D-backs, three against the Rockies, three against the Nationals, and you play the Marlins.
Yeah. We have a pretty easy end of the schedule besides that tough stretch with the Yankees, Giants, and Dodgers. Which, by the way, with how this season's going, we'll probably take like three or four of those games. So, you know, it'll be fine. We'll go 500 on that road trip.
But you'll get swept by the Rockies.
Then we'll get swept by the Rockies, yeah.
Hashtag Braves.
You don't want to talk about that. Just don't even bring it up.
Yeah. I'll just throw this out. I mean, for the Braves, they're somehow still in the race. You make moves like this, it helps fill the holes left by the losses of Ozuna and Acuna. Obviously, it's not the same as having those guys, but it's something. And when the division is still this close, somehow, and the Mets are as injury-riddled as they are and underperforming like they are the Phillies, you have a chance. And all you need is a chance in this sport. And if these moves help them get hot, especially at the right time, as we've seen from the San Francisco Giants in every other year from 2010 to 2014, you never know.
You know, it's funny because I think preseason we definitely said that this was going to be the most balanced division in all of baseball.
It is.
We're not actually wrong, though.
It's just not balanced in the way we anticipated.
Exactly. But it's the fourth place. The Nationals are 6.5 back.
But I want to point out, might I add, at the beginning of the year, I said that I felt this division would not produce a wild card team, and my prediction is currently holding up.
Yeah, your tough position that the Padres and the Dodgers will get the wild card spot. Yeah, that was a very tough position.
No, I didn't factor the Giants into it. I said that the Dodgers-Padres winner would get the West, the loser would get the wild card, the Reds would get the other wild card, and the East would beat up on itself so much that they wouldn't get a wild card. I was wrong in that they were going to be too good beating up on themselves. Instead, it's they're so bad they're beating up on themselves.
But the best part about all of these moves, by the way, Braves fans don't care. We've pretty much already punted this season. I mean, I'm happy that they're still going out and trying to win because, you know, I mean, I just like seeing that. But hey, you want to know what the most important roster move the Braves need to make right now? Extend Freddie Freeman. What are we doing? Why haven't we extended Freddie Freeman yet? Extend Freddie Freeman and we're good for next year. Anyway, sorry.
Because you got to give Jorge Soler a max deal at the end of the year.
Oh, of course. What's a max deal in baseball?
I don't think
for him, about $1 million+.
The max deal is whatever you can afford.
Just give the whole stack of money to Jorge Soler.
Freddie, sorry, we can't afford you. We gave Soler all our money.
Gosh, for the sake of this show, I hope that happens.
The rage, like you'll feel it from Charlotte.
It'll be a solo Josh episode, just an hour long of him like just ranting.
You know, actually, during our month hiatus, I was thinking about doing that, just doing a solo episode of me complaining about the Braves. I think it would be great.
Honestly, that would have been really
I would
fun.
Not have stopped you.
Would I have listened? Abso-frickin-lutely.
Oh, I would have had that on repeat.
I would have covered my drive to work every day.
That's great.
Those are the moves that we specifically are talking about here. We're going to take a quick break, have our Fantasy Fifth, courtesy of Tom Cloutier, and an ad break real quick. And we're going to be right back in just a moment.
Hello, everybody. I'm Tom Cloutier, and this is the Fantasy Fit. It's time to break down your Week 16 matchups. First matchup, better than Babe Ruth's be 100% capacity, 289 to 226. Better than Babe Ruth's were led by 33 points on the mound by Joe Musgrove, who had 11 Ks and allowed just 3 hits in a scoreless 7-inning performance. On the losing side, 100% capacity was led by Bryce Harper, who had 29 points on a 9-for-17 week with a homer and 10 walks. In our other Week 16 matchup, the Fighting Buck Farmers continued their dominance of the league with a 330-285 victory over Castellanos' drive. For the Fighting Buck Farmers, they were led by a duo of pitchers as Julio Urias and Aroldis Chapman both had 37 points on scoreless weeks. Meanwhile, for Castellanos' drive, Joey Votto's week-long homer streak provided 47 points to lead the league. After Week 16, the Fighting Buck Farmers stand at a 13-3 record, while the better than Babe Ruth and 100% capacity sit in the cellar at 6-10. Castellanos' drive, meanwhile, brings up the standings at 7-9. That'll do it for this week at the Fantasy Fit. As always, back to you guys in your respective apartments.
All right, we are back with you. Thanks again to Tom, as always, for our Fantasy Fit update. So, guys, this is our trade deadline special. We've talked specifically about some moves. There are some other big ones we didn't get into just because we don't want to go too long on time. But overall, we got a couple more questions here before we end this bad boy. And I'll start off with this one. Who do you think is the most improved team after this deadline when it's all said and done? Who has put themselves in the best position with their trade deadline moves? Bradley, I'll send it to you first.
This might be an answer to this one and the next one, but it's kind of an underrated one that I don't think anyone's really talking about. I'm going to go with the Blue Jays. Getting Berrios and Brad Hand, I didn't really think the Blue Jays would make a move because they have so much ground to make up, and they've got three teams that honestly are probably going to make things very difficult for them. But Berrios is a guy that a lot of teams were looking for. I mean, the Padres specifically, when they didn't get Max Scherzer, that was kind of a theft for Berrios to go out to the Blue Jays, because the Padres really kind of were looking for a really solid pitcher, and not getting Scherzer was really bitter. But Berrios would have been equally, I think, as important this year for them to get if they would have gone out to get a pitcher. But the Blue Jays now have a pretty solid staff. And to get Brad Hand to go with it, I mean, they're young. I think this could be a move, if he stays there like long term, I think this could be a move that doesn't just impact this year, but next year and even years to come, because the Blue Jays are only going to get better. They're a young team. They got a lot of room to grow. But
in a really stacked AL East, I didn't expect them to do anything. So I guess you could say, in terms of what I expect them to do and what they did, kudos to you, Toronto. And now you're back in Toronto. So a lot of good things for Blue Jays fans.
Yeah, that's a good one. Most improved team, I'll go with the Yankees because I just really like what they've done. They're bolstering their lineup a little bit more, and hopefully, you know, I don't like the Yankees, so hopefully it doesn't. But, for them, hopefully it does improve their lineup a little bit. But my biggest issue is just kind of getting Gallo, because you're just adding another, you know, home run or bust guy to your lineup, which you already have, like, five of those. But, you know, it's going to get them home runs, and then it's going to get them wins just until the playoffs. And then my biggest deal not discussed is Nelson Cruz to the Rays. I thought that was a very interesting one. And the Rays, we don't talk about it often, but the Rays are still good. I mean, they're leading their division right now. They're over the Red Sox by half a game right now. So Rays are still good, and they're still trying to get that a playoff push. So Nelson Cruz was a good addition there.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, that's exactly that is what the Yankees wish they had, is, or I guess I should say the Red Sox, is a DH spot available. And Cruz fills that perfectly. The Red Sox now have to deal with figuring out where they're going to put Schwarber, but Tampa Bay had they had a very, very good position for Nelson Cruz to slot in, and now he's there.
Yeah, that was a huge pickup for the Rays as well. Most improved team? That's tough. I mean, the Yankees did a big splash. I'm kind of tempted to say the Dodgers, just because they somehow finagled both Scherzer and Trey Turner from the Nationals. So screw it, I'll say the Dodgers on that front. Josh kind of jumped ahead on the biggest deal not discussed above. So our biggest deal that we haven't talked about thus far, we know Josh's answer. Bradley, what's your answer to that question?
Biggest deal not discussed above?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I wanted to deal with the Berrios one for the Blue Jays, and you guys took a lot of the good ones.
Or it could be a collection of deals from a particular team as well. Because while you're thinking, I'll actually go ahead and give my answer. And honestly, it's small splash. It's not even splashes, it's ripples. But it's kind of a homer pick, but I think the Reds going out and getting Michael Givens, Luis Sessa, and Justin Williams, three relievers, when the biggest issue for that team, the only really issue for that team so far this year, has been the bullpen depth and execution. I think that's enough to potentially keep pace with the Brewers and make a run at that division, or even try and sneak into a wild card spot.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. Yeah.
But I will say, in terms of a splash move, the Nelson Cruz move is definitely a good one to put in that category as well.
Yeah, I would agree. That's the one I really wanted to go with, and you guys really took mine. Rich Hill going to the Mets, I think it's interesting because you did not see...
Yeah.
We didn't see a ton come out about Jacob deGrom during the trade deadline, obviously just in terms of just news in general. But I know he did have kind of a setback over the next couple weeks, and they said he might not pitch till September. So someone to just kind of fill in a gap right now. I mean, it's funny, the Rays moved one 41-year-old and got a second 41-year-old in return, but moving someone like that to the Mets, I think it's interesting they dumped him, but it'll be good for the Mets right now, just in the short term, to get someone like that to fill that void while they wait on the status of DeGrom.
For sure. And I also even want to point out too what the Oakland Athletics did. They went out and acquired Starling Marte and also Yan Gomes and Josh Harrison. So, you know, not kind of similar to the Reds getting three relievers, like nothing major in terms of splashes. Like, these aren't blockbuster deals, but also shouting out the A's, who are just 4.5 games back of the Astros and the AL West out there, very much within striking distance, adding a little bit more depth in terms of infield, outfield, and pitching, infield, outfield, and catching. Like, you know, that's something that can definitely keep them in pace with the Astros. And if they're able to hit a stride, they might be able to come back in that division. But that's pretty much all we've got for you here in terms of our trade deadline special. It's been fun being back. But before we get the heck out of here, we got to turn our patent to triple play. Josh, I'm throwing it to you for out number one. What you got?
Well, I told you guys that I wanted to explain to you how frustrated I am with the Atlanta Braves, and here we are. The Braves have set the all-time record with 17 straight games without a consecutive win or loss. So their last 17 games has been loss, win, 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 loss.
Okay, that's unbelievable.
And in case you're wondering, Bradley, since we talked about run differential earlier, the Braves won a game 15-3. The next game lost 2-1. They won a game 12-5. Next game lost 2-1. They beat the Brewers Saturday 8-1. They lost today 2-1. I hate this team. Thank you.
And that folks, is how Josh's team got a plus 49 run differential. That is incredible. Wow. That is honestly hard to do.
I think I should add in too. It's like every other night to this effect. It's like I'll come home and Josh is like, Braves actually won a game. All right. And then the next night it's like, we freaking lost. Oh my God, I hate this team.
Oh, another fun fact about the Atlanta Braves, in case you're wondering, they have not played a single game above 500 this year. They've not been above 500.
Well, they're 27 and 27 at home and 25 and 27 on the road. So, yeah, that checks out.
They're 28 and 27 in the division. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I hate them.
I won't even say what their expected win loss is right now.
I'm sure it's 58 better.
58 and 48.
I would love that.
You might have made some moves at the trade deadline if that was the case.
Just pointing out 58 and 48 would put you three games ahead of the New York Mets, roughly.
We probably still would have made moves for the outfield, but yeah.
Well, the Mets are supposed to be 51 and 53, so you would be like six up right now.
Yeah. That would be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, well. What are you going to do?
I'm being tortured by Atlanta. Freaking Atlanta sports, man.
Gotta love it, man.
Kings of mediocrity.
My triple play. Again, just give me more chances to talk about the departure for all the Cubs players. We had Rizzo, Bryan, and Baez all leave the Cubs. Pretty emotional, like Wyatt said. But I don't know if you guys saw, they are the first trio of teammates to start a season on the same team, get traded, and then their first game, they all have a home run.
Yes, I did see that.
Which is pretty crazy and gotta be just salt in the wound for a Chicago fan. But again, I'm happy about that. So, yeah, that was pretty crazy.
I mean, that is wild, but I think it just speaks to how good these guys are that they can just immediately go to a new club and just pop right off.
I mean, Jock Peterson hit one like the second game he was a Brave, which I was there for that game and the crowd went nuts. So I'm sure it really helps just making a good, you know, impression on your new team, which those guys don't have to, but still helps.
Yeah. For mine, it's like Josh's, a homer pick again, but this one's a positive one, like Josh's. My boy,
you're not allowed up.
My boy, Joseph Daniel Votto, went off in a weak stretch, hit home runs in seven straight games, nine total home runs in that span, and he barely missed out on tying the MLB record of eight straight. I mean, in Citi Field, he missed it. It was a long single, less than half a foot short. According to StatCast, it would have been a home run in 10 of the 30 ballparks, including Cincinnati's. But alas, it's Citi Field. It's the beauty of this sport. Every ballpark is different dimensions. But regardless, one of the best streaks of Votto's career, and he's 37 years old. I love that this man's putting the team on his back when this team is really good and he just wants to friggin' win a World Series. I love it. But shout out to Joey Votto, becoming just one of like a handful of guys to ever hit a home run in seven straight games. And I think he's actually, only eight players have ever hit a home run in seven straight games. Votto's tied with Barry Bonds as the oldest to do it, age 37.
You know, my favorite part about this is the quote from Votto himself. So here's the exact quote. He said, "I'm a bit of a StatCast nerd, and it started with a .09 expected batting average home run with a 98 mile per hour weak fly ball that carried into the first couple rows into Cincinnati. And it ended on a 109, 110 mile per hour line drive off the wall. And that's baseball."
Yeah, I absolutely.
Which, by the way, I am not shocked at all that Joey Votto is a StatCast nerd.
It 100% checks out. I love that quote. It's perfect. And it's honestly one of the best like encapsulations of this ridiculously dumb sport that we all love.
But just it's so random, too. Like, Joey Votto, I mean, great player, obviously. Why? I know you love him. But just, if you would have told, it's like the no-hitters. If you would have told me that this guy's going to throw a no-hitter tonight or Joey Votto's going to hit however many home runs he did in a row, you know, you just, you can't predict it.
No, and I mean, look, I love Votto to death, but, like, he's always been, he's the on-base machine for us, you know? Like, he's always had pop, but he's never been a home run hitter. If you had told me anyone on our team was going to hit 7 straight home runs in a year, my 2 guesses would have been, in some order, Suarez or Castellanos, right? I would not have thought Votto would have done it. But after one of the games, Votto was asked, like, what's the difference? And he did say, I'm trying to hit home runs. So, I guess there's that. But that's all we've got for you on this Triple Play podcast episode today. It's been a while, but we are back. We'll hopefully have a more consistent put out of episodes here in the coming weeks and months. So, thank you for staying patient with us. We are back. Bradley, Josh, as always, thank you. Thanks to Tom for the Fantasy Fifth, and thanks to you for listening. We're going to see you on our next episode, hopefully sooner rather than later. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Until then, we are out of here.
It's a triple play.